Welcome to 77 Degrees South. Over the next six episodes, we'll follow a team of eight young people through their journey to one of the most remote places on Earth, the Ross Sea, Antarctica. These inspiring explorers followed in the footsteps of heroic era explorers Scott, Shackleton, and Borchgrevink, who forged a new era of science and exploration in the icy continent. They'll dodge icebergs as they attempt to visit the historic huts of these explorers and step backwards in frozen time to learn about the harsh Antarctic expeditions. With them, they'll be carrying a precious cargo, a historic artifact with a final destination set at 77 degrees south, Scott's Discovery Hut. But before we can board the southbound Heritage Adventurer, we first need to meet the Antarctic Heritage Trust and the inspiring explorers as we meet each other for the first time.
Ina mana, ina reo, ina karanga maha o te wa, tēnā koutou katoa. A huge welcome, inspiring explorers. It is so fantastic to have you here for our team building weekend for the Ross Sea expedition.
That's Francesca Eathorne, the Chief Executive of the Antarctic Heritage Trust, or the Big Boss.
So we have this vision of inspiring explorers, and we honour those inspiring explorers that came before us. Those early Antarctic explorers, Scott, Shackleton, then Hillary, Amundsen, the incredible things that them and their teams did to further science and exploration on behalf of humankind. And then we look to the future and we say, who will be our future advocates for this important cultural heritage? How will we inspire the future explorers of tomorrow, the Scots, the Shackletons, the Hillarys of tomorrow? We also have a mission to conserve, share and encourage the spirit of exploration. Our 10-year anniversary of our program, this is the first time that we're actually bringing all three of our different programs, conserve, share and encourage, together. And it's really exciting, and the whole team's been excited to get involved in planning this expedition.
Inspiring explorers, that's us. I'm Jake. I'm an educator, speaker and author on the psychology of resilience, but let me introduce you to the rest.
Kia ora, I'm Louise. I'm an Aucklander living in Christchurch, and I'm currently working in objects conservation at Canterbury Museum.
G'day, I'm Daniel. I'm the token Australian in the team. I am a conservator working at the National Museum of Australia in Canberra.
So I'm Lucy, and I'm originally from Christchurch and moved to Auckland to do my Masters of Architecture about 11 years ago.
Kia ora, my name is Ngāwai Clendon. I'm from Rotorua, which is a town located in the middle of the North Island, currently living in Wellington.
My name is Kitiono Billy Palacio. I am from South Auckland. I attend the school called Jeredman Hillary Collegiate, and I am the head boy in 2025.
My name is Callum. I am an audio engineer, I suppose, a sound guy, a musician.
My name is Maya. I live in Auckland. I'm a journalist there in my everyday life, but I'm from Te Tarawhiti, Gisborne, on the east coast of the North Island.
Before we boarded our ship to Antarctica, we met up in Christchurch just as summer was beginning to break.
Perfect. Callum, welcome to the studio.
Thank you. We're currently sitting outside on a deck.
Beautiful,
eh? It's beautiful, with a little bit of a breeze.
What scares you?
About the trip?
Yeah.
Well,
the get thing nice that's, and vulnerable with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, what scares me about this trip? There's a few things. The more obvious ones that jump out at me about what scares me is about going on a journey like this is I've never been a fan of deep ocean water. We're going to be in a boat for a month and very deep water with lots of things in them, large animals. And
have you ever traveled by boat before?
I've never traveled by boat before longer than an inter-islander trip or maybe a ferry in the top of the South Island. So this is a real first for me. I'm not great with the cold. I get cold pretty easy, so I'm gonna have to rug up. At least I'm used to rugging up and I know what to wear. Of course, there's always the things of like getting sick on the boat or, you know, what's that going to be like? Am I going to get overwhelmed at a certain point? But honestly, one of the other things that is scary is, you know, we're going to be disconnecting a lot from the world when we leave. And I'm used to being on all the time and having messages come onto my phone every day and I'm checking it. I have a real routine with that. And I think as I get older, disruptions to those little things that you didn't realize your routine can throw you off, and not to mention all the things that I have going on, you know, back home, friendships, relationships, and even as a musician, like gigs that I might have to miss out on, that kind of thing. It's scary to leave that.
Yeah, and might learn some new things about yourself just from having your routines disrupted.
That's right. And what if I come back different, you know? And yeah. I probably will in some way. But on the other end of that, like, I'm excited for that coming back different. I hope I do. I really do.
It's a big privilege, eh? It weighs a bit on my shoulders.
Yeah. It's a big privilege, like, since I'm the one representing, like, my school, like, Sir Edmund. That's pretty crazy. Yeah. Especially, like, since I'm 16, I need to learn heaps. So when I come back, I have to talk, like, in front of everyone.
Well, you already learned how to put up a tent. We covered that off.
Oh, yeah.
Check that off the list. We did that activity.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Now I know to do a tent. Thanks for the help.
What do you hope's gonna happen over the next month?
I'm hoping to, like, when I go to Antarctica, I'm hoping to make a tent by myself.
I don't think there's anything about the ship itself that scares me. I think that the geographic isolation is something which is probably, it's what scares me most, but also therefore what I'm probably most excited about for it as well. And when I interviewed with the team, you know, as it would have been for you guys as well, one of the questions that we were asked is, what do you think you'll find hardest, or what do you anticipate will be the most challenging about this for you? And I answered that at the time as well, because for me, I love hiking and tramping and trail running and being out in nature. I love the mountains particularly. I love sort of getting out into the backcountry. But the reason I like that is because it scares it out of me a little bit, like being so far away from civilization, from other people, from everything that we're used to. That's kind of why I like, you know, going so far out as you possibly can, because it brings in this element of being on edge, I suppose. And you know, that's when you're, you know, a 5 or a 6 or a 1 day or a 2 day walk away from civilization. This is 1,000 kilometers or more. This is days and days. This is true, pure isolation.
And even more so when we explorers were all learning about where they are.
Absolutely.
First people on this continent.
Well, and that's what I was going to say, is that, you know, there are more things that we have that separate us from the heroic age of explorers than are similar within this journey. We do the same journey, we sort of, you know, follow in the footsteps as it says, but the reality is that our experiences are so far removed from what their experiences were. One of the few common factors that we still share is that geographic isolation. You know, we're going to have the modern creature comforts, we're going to have the best gear, we're going to have all of this technological advancement, we're going to have internet still, even though we're in the middle of nowhere. Things which they couldn't have even comprehended. But at the end of the day, there's nothing that you can do. There's no technology which has, you know, superseded or alleviated that pure isolation. We're still going to be absolutely in the middle of nowhere.
What drove you to want to do this and want to be on this expedition?
I think when I saw it looked just like a really fantastic mix between heritage conservation and just outdoors and adventure, and those are just two things that I love both personally and professionally, and so it's kind of the perfect fusion of those things that I'm interested in. I'm quite new to conservation as a profession, and although I've been working in museums for a little while, and this type of conservation is really different to lab-based work. In a museum, you know, you have access to all of the resources you need, there's experts on call, there's not much. There can be time pressure, but this kind of extreme climate heritage conservation is on a whole different level, and I just really wanted to learn about how that works in practice out there, and really understand if that changes how people work when they are back on the mainland or in labs, and if that changes their kind of approaches or thoughts about, like, resourcing and the way they work and time and speed and teamwork and things. I think that being in those more extreme circumstances can kind of shift your perspective.
Yeah. I don't know about you, but when I realised I was doing this, I was like, what the hell, Maya? This is insane. So thinking that we're going to Antarctica, we've never been. What drove you to want to do this and want to come on this trip?
That's a good question. You know, for this trip, I have never heard of AHT. I had never heard of AHT before I had applied. And I merely, and truthfully, just applied because a customer at work had told me, you know, have you ever heard of AHT before? And I said no. She was like, you need to apply tonight. And the cutoff date was the very next day. So I had less than 24 hours to get my application through and do my one-way interviews.
The beauties of hospitality.
And really, I just put myself out there and applied because the worst I could get was a no. You know, I never knew. I would have never known, and I would have pinched myself had I not applied. And so I owe it all to that woman that I met that night, because if it wasn't for her, then I wouldn't be here right now.
Is there anything you expect to learn about yourself or have to go through? You asked me this the other day, and now I'm throwing it back at you on this expedition.
Well, that's interesting. Nice to see that you're recycling my questions.
Yeah, I am.
Yeah, I guess I've travelled a lot of different places and I've done a lot of different things, but every time I just kind of take things one step at a time. I try to take every opportunity that becomes available to me, you know, every great thing I try and say yes to. And I think as a result of that, I try and go into things kind of without any expectations or without trying to curate my experience or decide, you know, I'm going to go in and my life will be changed in this way. To be honest, I'm really curious just to see how it affects me. I think, you know, in my kind of old age, all my 32 years, I'm beginning to find myself getting a little bit maybe blasé about some things that are, you know, really the special things in life, and that's a little bit scary to me in some ways. And so I think a trip like this, it'll be really interesting to see how I react to things, you know, whether there'll be anything different or, you know, whether there'll be things that I don't expect. You know, to be faced with the humbling majesty of nature, is it going to change me for the better or for the worse, or not at all?
I don't even know how to describe it yet, but my boss Pip has worked for Antarctica for 20 years, and he's done these most amazing drawings and tells these stories of intense and everything, and so he works for the trust, and I have also been starting to work for the trust for the past couple of years. But I think one of the challenges is information transfer, because these people have worked so closely for 20 years. Like, how do I even start to get the knowledge that they have, which is just absolutely unreal. So yeah, that's how I'm here, which is actually a little bit different to everyone else.
But there's still the same journey, and
it's a
soaking up
journey,
all the knowledge,
and
like a sponge, I guess.
I feel that's what I want to get out of it, is just an understanding, but also like, for me to have my experience, because I'm a visual learner or like doing something, it's like I will feel connected in a way and then be able to help do the work better from my perspective as well.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it gives me some grounding for that, and also some understanding that, you know, we see photographs and there's absolutely nothing in that photograph that suggests it's cold except for the clothing that they're wearing. Like, it looks like a dry environment, you know? It's just an understanding I don't think you can get until you go there.
We've all been selected to come on this expedition because the Antarctic Heritage Trust reckons we could develop some of the qualities of the historic explorers, the men whose footsteps we'll be following as we explore the Ross Sea region. Robert Falcon Scott, Sir Ernest Shackleton and Carsten Borchgrevink. We'll be visiting the huts of the early explorers and witnessing firsthand why the Trust works to conserve these buildings in the extreme environment of Antarctica.
So this is the world's largest and longest running cold climate conservation project, and it's been running for just over 21 years. So we started it in 2002, and in that time we've raised about $25 million globally, and we've been able to undertake the initial conservation of three of the heroic era buildings, so both of Scott's Hut and Shackleton's Hut at Ross Island. And what that means is we've been able to make them weathertight, structurally sound, and we've also been able to care for and conserve all of the items that have been left behind. So there's been over 20,000 items left in these huts. So food, clothing, scientific, expedition equipment. I like to say, you name it, they took it. And so much of it has been left. We've had probably around 100 different specialists over the last 20-odd years travel from all around the world to come and work on these sites. So they might be heritage architects, conservationists who specialise in paper or metal or fabric, engineers, heritage carpenters, all sorts of different roles where it's been really important for us to bring the best people that we can find from around the world. And I think that's what makes this project truly unique and truly international. And they've come from about 15 different nationalities, so it really is an international project. Every year we are back on the ice undertaking our annual monitoring and maintenance program, and that includes ongoing conservation of these sites. They're like our own homes. You've got to keep doing a little bit of maintenance or things would actually fall into a state of disrepair. And this is our favourite job every year, is digging out snow, often by hand, because hey, it's Antarctica, the world's most extreme environment, and we do get that kind of snow build-up.
We're talking a lot about conservation in the context of heritage and historic buildings. For unfamiliar listeners, heritage conservation aligns pretty similarly with environmental conservation, coming back to the core principles of preservation, protection, and safekeeping, ensuring that precious resources are around for future generations to appreciate and learn from. In the same way that we protect taonga in our natural environment, such as wildlife and forests, heritage conservation seeks to protect and extend the life of significant cultural heritage, such as these iconic Antarctic huts and their associated artifacts. Our Inspiring Explorers team isn't just heading to Antarctica to experience its history. We've got a job to do. Coming with us, packed away securely and looked after by our team's resident conservators, is a unique artifact from the ice. It's a copy of Alexandre Dumas' classic tale of revenge and redemption, The Count of Monte Cristo. Our team will be attempting to return it to Discovery Hut, the hut used by Scott's first Antarctic expedition in 1901, and other parties from later expeditions that ventured south from Ross Island. Let's get Daniel to explain how the book came into the Trust's hands.
Basically, it disappeared from the ice maybe in kind of the 50s or 60s, so it was quite a while ago, we're not sure exactly when. At different times, objects have kind of come off the ice for lots of different reasons. Sometimes they've just kind of been souvenired, but more often than not, they've been taken with kind of the intention of putting them in a museum or sort of safeguarding them. It was gifted to somebody as a school prize. In, I think, the 1960s, and it stayed with that person for quite a long time, as sort of a treasured object, and more recently, with the kind of rise of, or as people are starting to return artifacts more and more often, that person obviously made the decision that they think it would sort of, it would be better off returning to its kind of, I suppose you might say, rightful home in Scott's Discovery Hut.
Daniel and Louise undertook the first steps to conserve the object before we left, at Archives New Zealand in Christchurch, with the help of Antarctic Heritage Trust Collections Conservation Manager Lizzie Meek.
So, just looking at this, it looks like a nice old copy of The Count of Monte Cristo. There's not that much of it left. Looks like it's just the text block, so the casing or the covers are not intact. So it looks like it's had a bit of a hard life. Doesn't look like it's the best quality paper, perhaps, so it's very yellowed. So it's super interesting here, just looking at all those fingerprints in there. So it's obviously a well-thumbed book. People obviously weren't too precious about it. And to me, the fact that it's trimmed so close to the printing, so it's got such kind of stingy borders, implies that it's a cheaper printing or a cheaper edition. Or possibly a rebind as well, which is kind of funny because they obviously were sort of no expense spared in coming on these expeditions, but maybe they didn't opt for the nicest quality books.
But this object is relatively robust compared to much of the paper we work with, which has been so affected by corrosion and salt that you have to treat it. You'd be lifting it on a support cloth, or yeah, it's very, some of the paper we have is very, very fragile.
This one's in good nick.
It's in really good condition.
Yeah. I've read books in worse condition than this.
For Louise, whose day job is as a conservation technician at Canterbury Museum, the book speaks to the harsh conditions that polar-era explorers weathered while sheltered inside Discovery Hut, and tells something of how they spent their time through the long darkness of Antarctic winters.
My first reaction to seeing the book was one of, I suppose, a little bit of awe to see the fingerprints of these people that had handled it in such a specific context. You know, there was the blubber and the soot and everything. It's a pretty remarkable item that says a lot about the explorers. It doesn't have a cover. It's lost a few pages, and the ears are the corners are kind of dog-eared, and it's well worn. You know, there's lots of fingerprints all over it, and the outer of the leaves is kind of coated in soot. So it's definitely been in an environment that's been quite a working environment, and in a kitchen it hasn't been kind of perfectly preserved and sitting on a library shelf. The condition of the book really speaks to its use. You know, it's been read hundreds of times. There's so many different fingerprints and marks, probably from multiple different people. The sootiness of the fingerprints kind of speaks to the hard work that the people were doing. You know, the constant kind of working over stoves and having limited resources and things. You know, there wasn't a hand basin nearby to kind of wash your hands after every use and things. And so it really speaks to that tough environment that the people reading this book might have been in, and maybe this book was just a nice reprieve from and a bit of an escape from that reality. This whole experience feels like a real privilege and a real honour. Not many people get the chance to even handle or work with these objects of such significance to the heroic era, and so to be able to be part of that journey, to work on it and then to return it to its home, I suppose, in the heart. In my job, we work with a lot of significant Antarctic collections, but they stay, you know, in the collection and access is kind of controlled. And so to be able to return something that can kind of go in situ to where it's from, that's such a rare opportunity. And it's just a real honour.
In the next episode, our team boards the Heritage Adventurer to set sail for Antarctica, and we make it to our first hut at Cape Adare.
This episode was written and produced by Maya Ingo, with additional writing by Louise Piggin, with technical production and music by Callum Turner, and narrated by Jake Bailey. Thanks to the donors to the Trust Inspiring Explorers Fund, expedition partner Heritage Expeditions, and supporter Cheshire Architects.